Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Sonya Rappaport.
My name is Willie Simpson.
Today we've got episode 60, which is episode 13 of season 4, The Lotus and the Steel.
Ooh.
Here we have a Wolverine episode.
Classic Wolverine episode.
Yeah. All you Wolverine lovers out there, get ready.
Wolverine in Japan.
Yeah.
No less.
Right.
Yeah, so this is a... I think this is a really good classic episode. It introduces fans of the show more of Wolverine's Japanese samurai past, which we got hints of, I think, in the beginning of season 3, where you meet his ex-girlfriend, Lady Deathstrike.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've talked about it before, his ninja past and things of that nature.
But I always like these Japanese past storylines for our superheroes. Wolverine, Batman, the Karate Kids, Mr. Miyagi.
You like traveling to Japan and learning about being a samurai and things of that nature?
Basically, I do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's one of the best episodes of the Batman animated series is when the two episodes where he talks about his ninja past.
Yeah, that's cool.
When he's training as a younger man in Japan to be the ultimate karate master.
Right.
Yeah, those are definitely my two favorite episodes of the Batman animated series. But yeah, here Wolverine, you know, his Japanese, I wouldn't say roots, but the origins of his Japanese tales, I think they're credited to Frank Miller and Chris Claremont, who teamed up and explored the concept of what if Wolverine was a samurai.
Yeah.
Or something to that nature. There's these, you know, those classic issues from the early 80s.
I mean, we've just spoken about how it's kind of a common trope at this point, but I wonder why.
Well, a lot of it...
Because it's like, if you're going to do a tie-in, right, where, like, your superhero goes to the source of their training in, like, some other place that they're not from, it's like, you could almost choose anywhere, you know? They could be learning, like, Taekwondo in Korea or, like, I don't know, Jiu-Jitsu in Brazil or... Mm-hmm. That's not originally Brazilian, I guess, but... You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
There's, like, fighting styles from, like, all around the world.
Right.
Like, all across, like, Africa and Asia and, like, I don't know, Japan is just, like, the magnet for our superheroes to go learn.
I think a lot of it has to do with the 1980s and pop culture.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, Japanese culture rose in prominence in that era, and a lot of American media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not, like, the full explanation. That's partially has to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's more interest in the Western world for things like, you know, karate and Asian culture.
Do you think that was because of the tech boom? Like,
I think
Japan was manufacturing a lot of, like, really cool technology that
like
was coming.
Nintendo and Sony and things.
Yeah, you know, like,
I think a lot of it had
spurred it.
I think that was part of it,
mm-hmm.
at least on the fun side. I just think there was increased Western interest in Far Eastern cultures that, you know...
I'm not disagreeing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, what's the root of that?
Well, I mean, if you want to get historical about it, it's the story of the 20th century with, you know, post-World War II prosperity.
Yeah.
And the way culture evolved in the 20th century where you have more... air travel, a lot more interest in international tourism, you know, a lot more book, you know, a lot in the Western side of it, there's a lot of the post-60s, post-70s, a lot of a quest amongst that generation for inner peace and meaning.
Right.
And people look to Eastern influences, whether it was, you know, like Southeast
the
Asian.
Ashrams in India.
Right, yeah, yoga, you know, meditation. The Beatles went to India in the 60s kind of thing. And,
right.
And so I just think, like, there's a lot of those confluence of things that led to a greater awareness and connection between these cultures.
This is, like, pretty far off topic at this point.
Well,
but I just heard about the, like, that ashram that the Beatles went to in India, in, like, northern India. Apparently it was built illegally on state land.
Ooh.
And so...
The Maharishi...
Yeah, so, like, I guess, like, some government officials realized and were like, oh, sorry, you have to, like, abandon this establishment because, like, this is state land. And, you know, they were like, oh, sorry, and they just, like, evacuated. But the building still stands, and it's, like, apparently exactly as, like, the Beatles themselves left it.
Oh, cool.
Like, with, like, murals and all the textiles and, like, mm-hmm. all their stuff is still there.
So, it's like, is it, like, a tourist destination?
Yeah, yeah, oh. You can, like, go visit it.
Oh, that's very awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to visit that maybe one day as a big Beatles fan.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, not really.
Well, that's why I told you.
I gotta get to England first.
What you really want is, like, the virtual tour, I guess.
Yeah, but. Yeah. But that's cool. Yeah, yeah, so, I mean...
Anyway.
You know, and then the debate can be had how much it is the Western, you know, media machines and tourism machines, how much are they, what's the right word, exploiting or, you know, like fetishizing things versus, like, truly paying homage to certain practices and cultures? I say it's all a good thing, especially when it errs on the side of, like, you know, meditation, you know, Buddhism and, you know, even stuff like, you know, karate, which is a form of exercise, essentially self-defense. And so it's, and that's like, and, you know, technology and stuff like video games and like, it's all good stuff to me. It's not, you can't just say it's some kind of cultural.
That's like the big conversation now, right? Is like appropriation versus appreciation.
Yeah.
So that's good that that conversation is happening.
Yeah, it's good that the conversation is happening, but I also don't think it's, I think we should be celebrating the things that we could mutually appreciate about each other's cultures instead of necessarily policing how we celebrate them. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, there's lines that one could cross. Mm. But really, you know, I think most of it is harmless and good. You know, it's good to learn about Buddhism. It's good to learn about karate.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So it's good to travel to different cultures and learn about different cultures. And things.
Right. Well, anyway, that brings us back to...
Yeah.
These episodes are really cool.
Yeah.
When Wolverine goes to
honestly,
Japan,
yeah.
really cool.
Yeah, and honestly, like, the episode touches on a lot of the themes we just talked about. It opens in a classic Professor X therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
we get more of a taste of Professor X's controversial therapy style. He's just randomly asking Wolverine about the worst things in his life. What's bothering you?
Yeah.
Is it the fact that... you got, like, your brain was twisted in half by Proteus a few months ago? No, he said he got over that. is it the fact that you had Weapon X, like, traumatic brainwashing and fake memories?
Right.
He's like, well, you know, Wolverine's like, some memories that are fake are still good. He says something like that.
Right. Well, because he flashes back to, what's her name?
Silver Fox.
Yeah, Silver Fox.
Yeah, another one of his tragic romances.
Yeah, right. Where he's like, some of that must have been real, Fox.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, whatever, bye.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, is it because your unrequited love for Jean Grey?
Yeah.
And to that, he actually doesn't answer.
Right.
That still bothers him.
So, in short, yes. That is part of it.
And then he's like, you know, when I joined the X-Men, I was a real berserk animal, but the X-Men gave me a purpose, which allowed me to, you know, collect myself and get in touch with my humanity or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now that purpose is gone, and I don't know what to live for. And he describes an incident where earlier in the day, where he had insane road rage, where a teenager cut him off, and he makes the guy, like, pull over, and he rips his car door off at the handle, and he then, like, is ready to kill the guy, pops his claws, and then Jubilee tries to stop him, who's with him at the time, and he says he almost hurt Jubilee in the incident.
Mm.
And then he's like, well, he's like, you know, it's like, I don't know what's wrong with me because I didn't care at that moment anymore. It's like I'm becoming a berserk animal again. I don't have a reason to live.
Which doesn't make sense because...
make sense he doesn't get arrested and just go to jail.
That doesn't make sense.
He really crossed the line there. Like, why is he allowed to walk free from that?
But also, why has his sense of purpose slipped away from him? He's still part of the X-Men. He's still part of the team that's supporting him. And you would think that if that gave him purpose... there would be a level of maintenance.
I think the episode goes into it, there's some themes that talk about. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he lives forever.
Right.
And he has a uniquely different life than a normal person, where almost forever remains a 40-year-old man in peak physical condition. who cannot be harmed. He can be put in tremendous pain and made to suffer and be tormented, but at the same time, he can't age. And a lot of his friends die. He sees a lot of tragedy, a lot of war that he lives through, and it's hard to process that. It's like it's too much living as a human. It probably makes you go crazy.
It's hard to even think about those moments, right? Like if he's being tortured, I feel like for a regular human, like a regular mortal, right?
Yeah.
Like part of the reason that torture is so horrible is because there's this distinct possibility that the more you suffer, the closer you are to death, and almost everyone has this like innate fear of death, right? Whereas for him, no matter how much he suffers, he will never die. So even if it's uncomfortable in the moment with his Zen training and stuff,
yeah,
you almost feel like he could just push through it and be like, this is temporary.
Yeah,
you know,
right? And he, to an extent, he has that ability to weather like insane psychological torment, but. I wouldn't say that he'll never die. I think Wolverine doesn't think he's invincible. I think Wolverine knows that he could die, or that he's going to die one day eventually.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, how long is he going to live? Is he going to live to like the year 200, 300, 500, 1,000?
Yeah.
I think that is something that plagues him to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those themes, too, are explored in the movie Logan and the Old Man Logan comic books as well. His death, the end of the road for him kind of storylines.
Yeah.
This is more of, like, the midlife crisis Logan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he has a fear of death. I think he has a longing for death at certain points because he's tired of living.
Yeah.
And that's a theme that's touched on in the Wolverine movie, which is, I guess, Wolverine 2, which we'll talk about one day. And it is very much related to this episode in many ways.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, he's an interesting character. He really is a uniquely great comic book character, and there's a lot of meat on the bone to explore. So let's carry on here. So instead of Professor X like helping him in any way, Wolverine prescribes himself his own cure. He's like, I'm going to go back to Japan where I've been before. I'm going to, like, meditate and just get away from it all. I'm quitting the X-Men.
Right. It seems like a pretty good idea to
me. Yeah, he's really self-aware. He's like, listen, like, I've lost my purpose. I'm too dangerous right now. And I'm just going to go on a vacation and a getaway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, despite him being sort of out of control and crazy, he does, like we've talked about before, he has a lot of intelligence, a lot of emotional intelligence, a lot of self-awareness, and he knows what to do. Professor X, I mean, I guess maybe you could say that Professor X helped him realize that.
Yeah.
But really, he doesn't say it. So Wolverine prescribes it for himself.
There. Yeah.
Before he leaves, he packs his bags. He gives one last look in the mirror. He's still sort of tripping balls. you know, I guess he's in, like, a deep depression. So he's in, like, a deep, deep depression because he's hallucinating. Mm-hmm. So he sees Nightcrawler in the window remind him of looking for, like, sort of inner peace through religion, more or less allusions to that we saw in the Nightcrawler episode. But then Nightcrawler morphs into Sabretooth, which Wolverine slashes his own mirror.
Right.
And
shards of glass on
everywhere,
the floor,
right as Jubilee, like, walks in. Yeah. And she doesn't seem to mind, but Jubilee, you know.
She's like, why are you leaving after she sees, like, all this shattered glass? Yeah. You know, it's like, well.
Yeah, and he has to explain to her he's a danger to the. He's not fit to be an X-Man.
Yeah.
So he heads off to Japan. It looks like he books a commercial flight, which I think is interesting in contrast to how Jubilee eventually gets to Japan later in this episode. He ends up in Japan. He's got some old friends there. One is an old monk master, a Buddhist master, presumably. They're rebuilding their temple with, you know, some, like, ancient building construction techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine, like many of the X-Men we learned in the show, if anything, they're good at construction. So he's there to lend a hand. There's, like, a huge wooden beam that's falling down. He helps lift it. He's good at, like, cutting trees down in the forest with his claws and, you know, laying out gravel. And
yeah, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah,
that type of work can be really meditative, and it, like, makes you physically tired at the end of the day. You sleep,
and they,
like,
outright say, the monk tells him, he says, rebuilding this temple will help rebuild your soul.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot to the fact, like, do a nice project and you know, it's like, good work for hard, the soul, right? Like,
take your mind off things,
right? There's a clear goal in mind,
yeah,
and you could be proud of it,
right?
You know, it makes you. I was reading about the ancient Egyptians, and you know, there's a lot of myths about ancient Egypt, which, you know, not too revelatory, but basically the fact that the people who built the pyramids were not slaves. They were paid experts, craftsmen, and you worked on one. It would take like 20 years to build a pyramid, and you worked on it most of your life, and you slept outside. You worked in like 3 month shifts, and while you're working there, you slept outside the pyramid. You know, you drank beer at night. Like I said, you got paid for it. They took a lot of pride in their work. And, you know, it's like, that sounds like actually a pretty good, I mean, it must have been grueling to build a pyramid.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
especially if you had the summer shift, you know?
Right. Yeah. But like, you took a lot of pride in it. And by the end of the day, you have a freaking world wonder completed, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like that kind of stuff is, it's rewarding to be involved in a project like that. So, anyway, and then we see scenes of Wolverine. He's meditating. He's wearing his karate gi. He goes to the local village. He meets some local villagers, and he meets a beautiful woman named Kassara. And, you know.
Of course. Of course there's a love interest.
Right, yeah. And she's got a wild brother who he's learning karate himself, and he's really outraged because the town is under constant threat from an extortion racket. As Wolverine later comments, the old protection racket, samurai style. Which is kind of funny. And it's like your classic, like, Seven Samurai plot, Karate Kid 2, Three Amigos, where this little defenseless village filled of farmers and fishermen are under threat from a roving, lawless gang that demands payment money each month, and the money is more than the town can afford, and they can't take it anymore. And at first, Wolverine, the twist here is that Wolverine is like, I just don't want to get involved. You know, I'm here for peace, not for violence. You know, obviously I could easily take care of this myself, but, you know, that I'm trying to learn a lesson here. And the brother guy calls Wolverine a coward, and he just accepts it and walks away. Meanwhile, Jubilee is still torn up about the fact that Wolverine left. You know, I think, like, she took his leaving too literally when he's like, I'm not fit to be an X-Man. She's like, oh, no, he quit forever.
Right. I better get him back. And she felt like it was kind of her fault.
Right, yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, she
Because she was there with in the car altercation with him.
She just wants him to feel like he's family and that he's needed and that she needs him.
Yeah.
So she, again, steals one of those little mini X jets,
right,
and starts a careening trans-Pacific international flight by herself to Japan, where you see her fly like dipsy doodling, like you know, nearly crashing into the ocean.
She makes it.
She, yeah, I know, but still, so
somehow.
Yeah, she's 15. So she's off to find Wolverine. Meanwhile, Wolverine's chopping down trees in the forest, and the Silver Samurai introduces himself. And he's one of these, you know, minor Wolverine villains from the comics, who wears a big, shiny metallic suit, presumably made of silver. I know in the movie it was made of adamantium.
Mm.
I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case in the comics, at least originally. I think it's just some, like, it's like some technological metallic suit that's got special abilities and stuff. And the Silver Samurai also has like a magic teleportation ring that he gets somehow. And he can teleport, and he's got sort of like magic swords, kind of, or they're, I don't know if they're magic or if they've just got weird energy blade powers to them. So at first, it's kind of a funny confrontation, because Silver Samurai is like, oh, you're a mutant, I'm going to threaten you. And Wolverine's like, I'm not a threat to you, I don't care, do whatever you want. He's like, alright, very well, goodbye, and he teleports away. And but, you know, it becomes obvious to Wolverine that he needs to get involved, because the Silver Samurai's gang burns down the temple that he's helping to build. Wolverine has to go in the temple while it's, like, totally
in flames.
Engrossed in flames. And it's actually a really cool animation. He's, like, completely red. It looks like Wolverine himself is probably being burned alive as he runs in there.
Actually, we talk about the animation from time to time with this show as if we know anything about animation, really.
Right.
But I was really appreciating the animation in this one. It's very watercolory.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
Really beautiful. There's a lot of, like, gorgeous sunrises and sunsets with colors painted all over the place. It's really nice.
I agree. It's one of the better looking episodes.
Yeah.
And like I said, I really, particularly sitting at this fire scene is really cool. He runs in there. He rescues his master friend, I think Oku,
uh-huh.
Master Oku.
Yeah.
And at this point, Wolverine's like, they explain the town's problems are explained to him again, and he's like, it never ends. And you get the sense that, like,
he's still life wary.
Yeah, well, he's conquered evil so many times. He's on small scales and huge scales. You know, uh-huh. He's fought in World War II. He saved the universe with the X-Men. You know, he's stopped a bunch of local thugs before, you know, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Like, small, medium, and large scale evil he has fought back. And he's just looking for, like, some utopia to retire to and live out his days, and he can't find it.
Maintaining the balance of good and evil is like having a meditation.
Right, and the monk explains that to him, because he's like, I just want to be peaceful like you, I don't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, well, maybe your purpose is to be a protector.
Yeah.
And he has to sort of live with that.
It's an ongoing practice is the point.
Right.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, just like in Three Amigos, Karate Kid 2, and Seven Samurai, more famously, the town prepares all these traps for the invading
gangsters.
Really elaborate traps.
Yeah.
You know, like enormous ditches in the road. They bust open a dam with a tremendous amount of water that floods the canal that they've dug. They have, like, fish and nets that fall on people. Really, they seem like they'd be taking care of themselves pretty well.
Seemed like such a waste of fish.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, you're defending your village.
This is a
long shot, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
But, like I said, like, they don't really need Wolverine's help that much. He intervenes a few times. He saves his master's life. Some gang members are about to shoot him, and he just jumps out of the woods and cuts their guns up and throws them away. So that he helped them there, and then he really only the brother of Kisara, he manages to take out the lead gang member, beats him up, and but then the Silver Samurai comes, and that's where Wolverine has to intervene, because obviously the town can't handle
it. It's not a fair match,
right? But Wolverine dispatches him like it's nothing.
Right.
He learns quickly, because the guy can teleport. He learns quickly. I'll just jump to where he likes to attack from behind, so I'll
just jump backwards, and then I'll get him.
Yeah.
And it worked on the first try.
Yeah, and it was cool. And Wolverine, obviously. But you know what? Like, that's not... To me, that's well-earned, because Wolverine is, like, amazing at fighting. So, you know...
No complaints.
He can beat up literally nearly anybody.
Was the Silver Samurai supposed to be a bigger threat than that? That's the only thing I'm wondering.
I think... I mean, you see in the movie, he's... You know, even in the movie, Wolverine kind of, like, beats him in 5 minutes. You know?
Yeah.
Even though it looks like he's a threat, he cuts his claws off and things like that.
Right.
I think, like, he's more of a mustache-twirling villain in the comics. He obviously has alliances with other strange villains, and he's up to no good in the Japanese underworld, and he's probably more of a threat, like, an elongated threat. But in the purposes of this one episode, Wolverine just kicks his butt.
Yeah.
And it's kind of stupidly, I thought... Where, when Wolverine beats him up, he says, we don't have to worry about him bothering this village anymore. Okay. And then he says, or any other village ever again. And it's like, really?
Are you going to enforce that one?
Yeah, Wolverine just promises the town that the threat... Because the Silver Samurai is not, like, dead or anything. He just sadly walks away.
Yeah.
He's with his armor and all his magical weapons and stuff. So
what's the overarching lesson there? Because at first, when Wolverine arrives in this village, he's like, I'm not getting involved in this village's affairs. I'm here for peace and to find myself. And then by the end, he gets very involved in this village's affairs for the good of the village. He saves them. But, like, I almost had this feeling at the beginning of the episode that it was like, teach a man to fish. What's the saying?
Yeah. It's
give a man a fish, he eats for a day.
Teach him to fish, he can eat for the rest of his life.
So I thought it was kind of like, all right, if I fight this one battle for them, then it doesn't set them up for success for the rest of the longevity of the village, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
But maybe that wasn't it so much.
I don't think... I think you're right. The lesson itself is murky, because the village didn't really seem to need him that much.
Right.
And also, his intervening, while useful, it doesn't... it doesn't like speak to, it doesn't connect to some broader theme. Mm. I think the purpose of the episode is more just about an exploration of his psyche and his search for peace than it is about like what lesson we're to learn as far as him fitting into a little society like this village.
Yeah.
So, and they've done this episode before too, where he's in the Inuit village in Canada. And he's fighting Sabretooth, and it's, like, the same thing. Like, he's accepted into this village, and then Sabretooth, like, destroys it.
Right.
And he has
But there it's more, like, tragic, I thought.
Right,
because
yeah.
there it's, like, he's the one that draws Sabretooth into the village. The village would have been fine if Wolverine
right.
had never shown up.
It's all about trouble following him. In this case, it's, like, the village
the
had
its own
problems.
The trouble was going to be there no matter what, and he just happened to be there to help out.
Like I said, I think it's more about the theme of the fact that he lives forever, and he's always... he can't, like, rest... He always has to be fighting, no matter what. Like, there's no... He's always called to action.
Yeah.
He's just tired of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's one of the main themes. I don't know. If do you see a broader theme here, let us know on the X-Task Facebook group.
No, I don't know. I was just thinking
about
it.
No, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure either. Like I said, I think it's murky more than anything.
I guess also at the beginning when he's talking to Professor X, he feels like he's lost his purpose and
right.
stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
it's very
maybe it's about like rediscovering that his purpose is to like continue fighting the good fight.
Yeah. That, and yeah, it is. It's about finding
right.
yeah, it's about finding a purpose, a reason to live. And, you know, at the end of the episode, he makes out with the Kisara, the woman.
Right.
So, and again, it's about teaching him that love's still out there, that meeting new people, you know, like getting in new adventures and experiences is always restorative.
Right.
So, I guess he hasn't gotten tired of kissing ladies yet. which you think might could happen over hundreds of years.
Uh-huh.
You're like, all right, I'm tired of romance. What's the point? But, and then the episode ends where they have to rebuild the temple again. There's more construction. Like, many X-Men episodes end with a construction job.
Right. They leave destruction in their path.
And everyone has to
we
see the restoration
thank them and
effort.
Move on.
Yeah. And Wolverine's like, I can't help rebuild the temple. I've already rebuilt it once this episode. I'm not doing it again. I have to go home and be an X-Man.
Yeah.
But then again, why does he have to go home? I mean, I get that he's discovered his purpose, that he has to help people. But he's got, you know, this nice Kisara woman there. The village seems safe now.
Yeah.
It was a small little problem that he helped fix. Why is he leaving immediately?
Maybe he feels like he fixed it and there's
bigger,
not much more good to be done.
I guess he knows there's
there.
Bigger fish to fry with the X-Men.
Yeah.
That he's needed there. And then Jubilee leaves with him, and she's kind of annoying in the end, like, asking him a million questions. But he likes Jubilee, you know. Well, classic Wolverine trope is that he has, a teenage girl mascot around him that takes to him, be it Kitty Pryde or Jubilee. I think there's one or two other. Like, in the more modern
comic. In the movies.
Right, yeah. Rogue in the movies is this character named Armor in the more modern cartoons. He always has, like, a female apprentice. And then also, like, I guess his semi-daughter, X-23, his clone self-daughter, is another one in the movies. So that's, like, a classic theme of Wolverine.
Right.
He's a father figure for these mutant outcast
exactly.
girls.
Exactly. There needs to be, like, a soft side to him.
Right. And it's good. It's, like, I think it's a nice trope. It's, like, if he's going to have a sidekick, it's nice that it's a spunky teenage girl.
Yeah.
And it's not really sexual, so it's, like, you know, there's no weird side to it like
right.
that. It's more protective.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he really does have a heart of gold, despite him having a berserker rage side.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the end, I thought it was a very well animated episode, like yourself. I thought,
I'm a well animated episode.
I mean, it's another like nice pastiche episode where they give you, they explore some themes that you wouldn't otherwise think you'd get from your standard animated children's show.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting into the psyche of a real specific character who's, on the one hand, really awesome and cool, but you're seeing the complex human side of him.
Yeah.
And it introduces children to those themes and also to the world of comics more. You get a broader sense. You see, like, how wonderful Marvel is with their endless stories and their complex humanism and
right.
stuff.
I think definitely in past episodes, actually, when we've spoken about our favorite characters and their moments and stuff, I kind of came down hard on Wolverine and was like, well, he's not my favorite. When really the only reason I think that is because he's like a fan favorite.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, for me personally, it's like, everybody loves him already. He gets enough.
Yeah.
So, like, let me turn my attention elsewhere, you know? When really, like, he's given great storylines.
Yeah.
And
he's deserving it. It's earned. Because he's given great storylines. He's a great character. So it's like, on the one hand, there is the overkill aspect of him that he's too much front and center. But on the other side of it,
like, you're like, all right, it's deserved.
The reason it exists is because they mine so much great material and yeah. they built up the popularity.
Right.
You know, part of the cartoon exists in the continuum of his rising popularity in general as yep. a pop culture figure.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, I still think the movies, the biggest success of the movies has been also translating Wolverine's star power to that broad mass audience as well, too,
mm-hmm.
if they've done anything. I think they failed presenting the X-Men as a concept, as a team, you know, in many ways.
Yeah.
They haven't gotten that correct. But they have gotten, with Hugh Jackman's performance, they've gotten Wolverine mostly pretty good.
Right. And well, that's why there's a whole run of Wolverine movies.
Right, and they'll continue to be at some point.
Right.
And so I think, like, Wolverine is deserving. And I do think that, you know, even though he's been done to death, I do think there's more... At least talking about in a movie side, I think there's more to be done with Wolverine that hasn't been shown yet. I think one aspect that they could explore, I've said it before in the podcast, but let's see Wolverine more as a side character in the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And this presumes that you're getting a better written X-Men movie where the characters are given more of a better due
mm-hmm.
than they are. Like, put Wolverine in as proper starring... It's a side role, but it's a starring side role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how he was introduced in the comics. He's just this great, awesome wild card guy on the side that you love, you know?
Yeah.
Like, put him in his place more there instead of making him the leader of the team or the center of the focus. Have him be this, like, bubbling force on the side of the screen. And that's really cool, I think. I think there's a place for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, like, from there, from that side view, then you on his own movies or spinoffs, you see him, you follow him more, whether he joins the Avengers in Adventures or, you know, another spinoff crossover movies, things of that nature. I think there's a side to Wolverine, there's a characterization that exists that hasn't been done yet. I think Hugh Jackman did a very good starring man role and, like, everyman performance of mm-hmm. him, where it's almost like Wolverine is, like, a sane guy in this crazy world and you're following the story through his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's, like, a version to be written where Wolverine's, like, crazier and a bit more... Like they talk about in this episode, he's got this berserker origin, you mm-hmm. know, this wild animal that needs to be tamed, that needs to be... He needs to find his humanity.
Mm.
And I think... And he's more of a mutant, you know what I mean? More of, like, a fierce, like, creature. And I think... And a creature finding his humanity, you know, or reclaiming his humanity. I think that story can be explored more in a movie. I think that'd be interesting.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'm just saying that I think, like, even though...
You just said that you thought there was a place for him to be, like, sidelined, though. And that sounds like a more starring role.
No, I'm saying that's... I'm saying you put him on the side, and that's the... You know, any character on the side is given some kind of presentation and backstory. So he's on the side, but it's, like, from a different perspective.
Okay.
You know, and like I said, the perspective is less, like, he is the leading man, and more, like, who's this strange side character? And then... Because you know Wolverine's a big star anyway, you eventually get to exploring it, but just from a different perspective.
Okay.
That might be confusing to follow, but, I think it makes sense.
I just was thinking, like, we haven't had, in the X-Men cartoon so far, we haven't had, like, an overwhelming number of Wolverine-focused episodes. So...
You don't... Really? I think there's been plenty.
Yeah, but there's also plenty where he's not in it
at all.
Yeah,
that's true.
Or he is kind of on the side.
And that's what I like about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It feels more well-rounded versus honestly, in a lot of these X-Men movies, he's just front and center, like, the whole time.
You know what? You just explained it so much better. That's what I'm saying. Do it like the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, right.
He's a side character in some episodes. He's witty and has witty banter sometimes and makes amusing observations while he fights really coolly.
Yeah.
And then there's other episodes where he's kind of the star and you explore his backstory.
Right.
And it's like a nice tapestry. So that's the way... That's a much more concise way of explaining it. Yeah, just follow the X-Men cartoon, you'll be in good shape. And it's what they, you know, to an extent, it's what they did in the comics for years. I think, you know, he obviously took more of a starring role, too, as the decades went on, as well, in the comics. But the original comics, it was like that as well, you know?
You know, I wish that that's how the movies just played out. I wish that, like, whoever was going to make X-Men movies from the very first just went to the X-Men tests.
Well, they did.
And, like, yeah, but I wish they had chosen, like, all right, the first however many, what are these, 20 minutes long?
Yeah.
So you take six of them, and that's your first movie. And then, like, the next six, or however the story arcs.
You just,
work,
like, directly,
right?
Steal the plots from the cartoon from season one.
Beat for beat.
Oh, my God. Like, a live adaptation of the X-Men animated series.
Yes, with special effects and movie stars and
well,
stuff.
Well, I mean,
that would be great.
You know what? It would be great. Like, I've had that theory. And that has nothing to do with the X. I've had this theory where I feel like in 500 years, someone's going to go back into The Simpsons and do a beat-for-beat live-action version of The Simpsons of each episode.
In 500 years?
I don't know. Just some, because I don't think it's feasible to do it. It's not feasible to do it now.
I don't think the storylines are going to hold up.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's like an art project. You know what I mean? It's like you take like an animated show and you make it. It's like a direct adaptation, live adaptation, but it's exactly like the cartoon.
Yeah.
Shot for shot, line for line.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Almost like an art project of just recreating it in reality.
Uh-huh.
So, like I said, I've had that thought. Like, I feel like The Simpsons, you couldn't do that today.
No.
It's too crazy. But I feel like one day when it would be easier to do. Because the reason I said 500 years is like production costs being what they were. First of all, it's an absurd idea.
Yes.
But it's like in 500 years, people will be able to create this shit in a computer, you know, with like CGI humans that look like human beings.
All
you
right.
know what I'm saying?
Not really.
I know. I'm just saying, it's like when the production cost has to be at a point where you could just do it in a computer, where you don't have to like hire an enormous... Like
pay actors.
Yeah, pay actors $100 million on production and sets and building sets. Because that's what I'm saying. The Simpsons, they go from like China to India to Springfield like in 10 seconds. You can't have that in a live action.
Okay.
In a 22-minute thing. You know what I mean? There's too much crazy shit happening because it's a cartoon. A cartoon can go into outer space.
Yeah, I understand.
You know,
I'm just saying, why would anyone remake The Simpsons ever?
Because I was just... Because I think it's like an art project. That I'm not saying they would do it commercially.
All right.
That's what I'm saying in like 500 years when you could recreate it as a crazy art project.
Uh-huh.
This is just a bizarre theory I've had. So I'm saying that reminds me that what you said about the X-Men is similar.
Oh, okay.
It's like you're taking...
No, I didn't mean shot for shot,
right.
beat for beat.
I know.
I just
yeah.
meant like, and a lot of the X-Men cartoons are like already set up like that, right? Like there's these like three-parters or five-parters or whatever. They're
yeah.
an all-encompassing story.
Almost movie length.
Right. And like then there are, you know, your standalone episodes, there'll be a run of them
yeah.
in between those like more contained storylines. So just like use it, you know, like the work has already been done for you. Just make it more spectacular.
But honestly,
for the big screen.
But you just described what the cartoon was in relation to the comics. They took the comics, they summarized them in a way that was like palatable and made sense for a cartoon format.
Yeah.
And they paid like proper homage to the comic books and captured the spirit and tone perfectly and adapted it to their ends.
Yeah.
They don't need to look to the cartoon to do that for the movies. They just need to look to the comics in a more accurate way. Like,
yeah,
that's
okay,
really...
fine. So look to the comics.
Yeah,
I'm just
I know.
Saying,
that's
like,
the
for
problem.
For a movie maker that's not a diehard X-Men fan, which is, like, stupid to hire someone who's not a diehard X-Men fan. But anyways,
yeah.
like,
well,
those people are not going to go back to the comics because that's such, like, an endless source of material. It's so much to comb
well, that's,
through.
That's... You're right.
Whereas, like, the cartoon is finite.
Bryan
like,
Singer...
We are watching every episode without much trouble,
right.
so...
Right. Bryan Singer in his...
Yeah, but Bryan
he never
Singer,
read an X-Men comic.
Yeah, I know. We talk about it all the time.
I know.
Time,
but I'm like... just saying, so he did the lazy man way, sort of what you're suggesting. He just watched the cartoon to get an idea of what the X-Men were. That was it.
Yeah, but he just got an idea of what it was.
Right. But
he didn't, like, use it to its full potential.
Yeah, but that's... Exactly. He was lazy.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige, when he takes over the X-Men franchise, when the Disney Fox sale goes through, he's an actual comic book nerd. He's going to go to the comics and make it right. Like, he's made the Avengers right and Captain America right, you know.
Okay.
He's a guy, he's a freaking expert.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, that's why he's worshipped in comic communities. Because
know.
He, like, knows, he understands the source material in a beautiful way and can translate it to a film. So that's why everyone's, like, hopeful about the Disney purchase of X-Men. Because
I know, I feel like we talk about that.
We
like,
do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's,
we're always, like, fingers crossed.
But, it's gonna,
like,
but he will, and it's going to be awesome. I really have faith that they're going to... Kevin Feige, when he gets his hands on the X-Men, he's not going to fuck it up, you know? And I think, like, him, like many Marvel fans, is, like, through the cracks and corners of interviews he's read, like, he understands what the X-Men are in the Marvel Universe and how important they are.
Yeah.
And the X-Men was... He worked on the first X-Men movie, too, as a creative consultant, so... And the X-Men movie's not bad. It's not a bad adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
could be better, as we've discussed many times. Mm-hmm. So I think we're headed towards that reality, that the future X-Men movies, Dark Phoenix notwithstanding, which is going to suck, I think the ones in Disney will be amazing, and they're going to capture some kind of X-Men magic that we've all been dying for, thirsting for.
All right, so The Lotus and the Steel, I give it a 6 out of 6 adamantium claws. How about you?
Yeah, I give it a 6 out of 6 adamantium claws as well. One for each claw.
Yes.
One
what for each claw?
One spangly light reflection, sparkly light reflection off his claws in the moonlight.
All right.
Yeah. So that's all we got. Follow us on Facebook. Join the X-Men Task Facebook group. I saw some new members join this week. That's always exciting.
Yep. Hey, new people.
Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes or whatever podcast service you use. That goes a long way towards helping our visibility. I just want to thank the fans again. You know, you guys have stayed loyal to us with the podcast, and we hope to have more fun episodes and things coming forward in the future, as always. And that's all I got. Sonia, any parting words?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.